Good evening. Welcome to the November 16th meeting, Planning Commission meeting. We will begin with our introductions. I'll go first. Joe Phillips, North Kitsap. Go ahead, Alan.
Alan Beam, Central Kitsap.
Thanks.
Stephen Bowe, Central Kitsap.
Okay.
Carrie Kaltenborn Corey, South Kitsap.
Okay.
Danielle Douthit, South Kitsap.
All right. And I believe, Amy, you're the last one we've got right now.
Amy Mall, North Kitsap.
Okay. Commissioner Aaron is not going to make tonight's meeting, and then we'll see if our other commissioners come in here shortly. With that, the virtual meeting protocol for those that are listening in, when we have a public comment period, you can, if you're on the internet, you can click the hand below on the bottom of your screen to indicate you'd like to speak. And then your sound will be unmuted when we call on you. For call-in users, you use *9 to indicate that you wish to speak. And then when we call your last four digits, then you can use *6 to unmute and you may speak. Time limit is 2 minutes per person. And we also accept written comments that can be read on the meeting time. And we appreciate to get those by 2 p.m. the day before the meeting. Okay. Let's see. Oh, for public hearings, we usually extend the time limit to 3 minutes. All right. With that, do I have a motion to adopt the agenda?
I move to adopt the agenda.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? I know we do not have the November 9th minutes to be approved, so you can strike that from the meeting. Any other changes? Nope. Okay. All those in favor of the agenda, please raise your hand and say yes or
aye.
It's unanimous. Okay, thank you. That brings us to the adoption of the minutes. Do I have a motion to adopt the minutes of the November 19th meeting? October 19th. I'm trying to move us along here. Kaltenborn, Corey?
I move to adopt the October 19th minutes.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Second.
Commissioner Beam. Thank you. Okay. Any discussion on the minutes? No? Okay. All those in favor of adopting the minutes for October 19th, please raise your hand, say yes.
Yes.
Okay. It's adopted. Do I have a motion for the October 26th meeting minutes? Yeah. Commissioner Bean.
I make a motion we adopt the 26th October minutes.
Okay. Do I have a second? Commissioner Bowe. Okay. All right. Any discussion on the October 26th? Minutes? No? Okay. All those in favor of adopting the minutes for October 26th, please raise your hand, say yes. You approve. 1, 2, 3, 5. And those opposed? And those abstaining? 1. Okay. 5. Is that enough to adopt, Amanda?
Yes, that's enough.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So those are passed and adopted. Okay. That brings us to our first general public comment of the evening. I do not see any attendees on our, any phone? No?
I am not seeing any right now either.
Going once, going twice. Okay, I will close the general public comment period and move to the work study for open space applications. And that would be, who's kidding? Colin Puff.
That's me.
Okay. The floor is yours.
Thank you. I'm just going to do a quick overview and presentation for just one open space application that we have. Those of you who haven't met here, which I think is all of the Planning Commission, because this is my first Planning Commission. Nice to meet you. My name's Colin Poff. I'm a planner with the Department of Community Development. I've been there for a bit over a year. So I work with land use and environmental type of planning. And so this is a work study today for an open space application. I will just go ahead and share my screen as I have a quick 6 or 7 minute presentation just to kind of introduce this project. So,
okay.
Everyone can see my screen all right?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so this one's called the DeSormier Open Space. It's project number 20-06087. Department of Community Development does review open space applications. If it were for agricultural lands or for timber lands, that would be done by the assessor's office. But we review these and would take them through the process all at the same time. But for the year 2021, we just have this one to present. So this one is for the proposal is to transfer approximately 3.17 acres of land or 42% of the overall parcel currently designated as single family residence by the assessor to current use open space. The parcel overall is approximately 7.53 acres and it's already developed with a single family residence and detached garage, septic drain field and driveway. So essentially the proposal would be to take 42% of that overall site or 3.17 acres and put that into the assessor use of current of open space, thereby reducing the taxable value on that 42%. This is where it's located, just east of Silverdale. It's in the southernmost portion of the North Kitsap Commissioner District number one. Just a little primer on the open space program. Again, we do this every year about this time of year where there may be 3 or 4 applications. This year, we just have the one. But this all comes from the Open Space Taxation Act from 1970. So it is a state program and is available statewide. And we're implementing it here on in the county. And it allows property owners the opportunity to have their open space, their farmland or agricultural and timberlands valued for taxation as open space rather than what is the highest and best use. So in the RCW, the state actually has definitions of what open space is. Relating to this application, they would relate to conserving and maintaining scenic and natural resources, or there's a definition for protecting streams and water supply, for example. And so this is a state program and we're implementing it through Kitsap County Code Chapter 1812. The purpose in the code reads as, the open space program is to maintain, preserve, conserve, and otherwise continue in existence adequate open space lands and to assure the use and enjoyment of natural resources and scenic beauty for the economic and social well-being of the state and its citizens. So that's the purpose statement in our code. And again, we're implementing this open space program. And then the process, just an overview here, this is called a type 4 process. So we review these at DCD and present them to the hearing, the planning commissioner, excuse me. And then the planning commission would then make a recommendation to the Board of County Commissioners for approval. And so this, we did a notice of application for this June 29th of 2021. We actually did it again, revised November 3rd, simply because we needed to state that this was that type 4 process clearly on the notice of application. And we're currently here at the Planning Commission work study. Following this would be a Planning Commission hearing, which I believe would be tentatively on December 7th of 2021. Following that would be a Board of County Commissioners hearing to be determined. And I'll mention again, we usually do a few of these in a year. This is the only one this year, but to avoid needing to defer the change in taxes another year, it would need to be adopted within the calendar year. So it might be worth considering having the Planning Commission hearing and findings of fact at the same time, if it's possible, allowing enough time to get to the Board of County Commissioners within the calendar year. But that's an overview of the process generally for these. This is the site plan that they submitted. And the main thing just to see here is the hatched area. That's the 3.8 or so acres or 42% of the site that they're proposing to put into open space. And you'll notice that that's essentially the area of the site that's not cleared. There's an existing driveway, home, detached garage, and septic drain field there already developed on the site. And this hatched area corresponds with mature native vegetation that's on the site. There's also an existing man-made pond or wetland there in the middle of the site as well. I would note that that's not included in the open space calculation, but it's the area there in hatch that they would propose to preserve and continuity as open space. And so if you look at the aerial, you can see where that man-made pond is right in the middle of the site and where the existing developments are. And then you can see the rural character of the overall area and the heavy mature vegetation there that's on their site that then would be designated as open space for the future. This is the zoning. It's rural residential on the site and throughout the general vicinity. And then here's our critical areas map. And so it shows that wetland area there in the middle, and also the green is what's called hydric soils. And I say that because that doesn't necessarily mean there's a more wetlands, but it's indicative of more wetlands in the area. And they actually did submit with their application a single family wetland certification. So it shows the on-site wetland as well as the presence of some off-site with buffers that might extend just onto the corner of their property. There's also a that black dotted line is actually a stream per that certification. So there would be a stream just offsite as well. And then the orange color just represents critical aquifer recharge area. And so that brings me to the next slide, just seeing where these critical areas are on the site. The resources that they might need to qualify to be open space. So in our code, you can have anywhere from a 50% reduction in your taxes for open space to a 90% reduction in your taxes. And that's dependent on having various resources present, or you could go up in your reduction if you have a public access or a conservation easement, things of value like that. So they're proposing just to have the minimum of 50% reduction in land value. And that's based on the minimum criteria of having two of these resources present. So, for example, that would be wetlands, ponds, and streams. It would also be watersheds and aquifer recharge area as they have. And then on low priority resources, one is listed as preservation of visual quality. And so with that, they would meet the minimum criteria for having of that 50% reduction in land value. we, as we do with all these applications, requested the assessor to look at what that tax shift would actually be. So for that, that would decrease their annual tax burden by approximately $345 a year based on that. So with that, that's just a quick overview of this proposal for open space. I have my email there if you want to follow up after this with more questions, or if you go through the materials more and have more questions, but thanks for your time.
Okay, well, do we have any questions for Colin at this time? Commissioner Lyason.
Can you tell me approximately how many acres are currently in the open space program throughout Kitsap?
I don't have that information in front of me. I don't know if I'd probably have to reach out to our GIS person, which I definitely could do. Cindy, she would probably be able to find something fairly quickly, but I can certainly follow up with that.
Okay, thank you. Just kind of a ballpark. I don't need
to say.
It'd be great to know. It's a great program. Thank you.
Yeah, good question.
Kitsap County Assessor's Office also produces a report of various current use tax exemption on an annual basis. So we can also look on that website as well. It should be rolling out as we close 2021 as well.
Sounds good. Right.
Well, Commissioner Beam. Oh, sorry. Commissioner Beam.
I'm muted.
Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Is there a requirement for public access to the open space?
Not with this application, there isn't.
I thought that was part of the deal.
It could be. You can have additional things like public access or conservation easements and things like that to actually apply for a greater reduction in taxes. This one's, I guess, more on the simple end in that it just has those two priority resources on site to get that 50% reduction, but it didn't propose any public access.
And then Commissioner Kaltenborn Corey.
I had a similar question. Just what would the use be? But then also in the info you sent over, it states the current applicant can't use that land anymore. How is that enforced? How do you know that they're not using it for recreational activity?
Yeah, there's a condition of approval for a signed agreement. So something would actually be recorded. I can't remember exactly what that looks like, but yeah, that's a standard condition that we require of all these to actually go with the land, that they have something recorded that this is considered open space. If they ever came in for a application for a permit application, that would be quickly available as well. So,
okay. Any other questions at this time? No? Okay. Well, thank you for the presentation and we will see you next meeting. For that.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
All right. Moving on to the agenda, we have the public hearing for Title 15, the Flood Hazards Amendment. Mr. Kinley, you're up.
Good evening, commissioners. Thank you for your time again this week. My name's David Kinley, Assistant Director for Department of Community Development, the Chief Building Official and Floodplain Administrator. Before you this evening is, again, the Title 15 Flood Hazard Area Ordinance Update. I'm going to share my screen here. Pardon me for a moment here as I get the slideshow going. Not as many screens as I need, evidently. There we go. So, find my controls again. Same slideshow we went through a few weeks ago during work study. So I thought I'd go through this again rather quickly, but for the benefit of any public that might be attending this evening. So in April of this year, we conducted our ecology community assistance visit as requested by State Department of Ecology. It began last fall with an inspection of development in Kitsap County. Representative from Department of Ecology drove around to different sites of development within Kitsap County and took some pictures. That was all part of our community assistance visit, where they presented these findings or these questions basically, and we had to respond to those as part of this CAV. The part of that CAV also was a virtual interview, and we went through training on the Puget Sound biop. Also part of that, they asked for a list of all development permits that were issued within Kitsap County between 2017 and 2020. And out of that, they selected a sampling of that audit, and then we were to provide all the data behind that, including the process for review and issuance of those permits. So out of that, we actually had a really great response. They're happy with the way we're doing things. And there was a couple of items for follow-up on that, which we have since conducted, including some additional training for some of our staff. So part of that was a requirement coming out of the CAB for to update Title 15 to meet current FEMA and Department of Ecology requirements. There's a FEMA model ordinance for Washington State that dictates that certain components of that model ordinance must be contained within the local jurisdiction's code. So we are embarking on that. This is the second part of that, just going to public hearing. Potential impact of not getting to point of compliance with the FEMA model ordinance for Washington State is that it could possibly impact NFIP rates for Kitsap County residents who have properties within the floodplain. On to the next slide here. This is an overview of our process that we've been through. You can see it took several months at the beginning towards the middle part of the year to go through that community assistance visit and responses. Again, moving on to Planning Commission review and recommendation. You can see the dates there on where right, get my cursor over to the right screen. We're right here at 11:16 for the public hearing. We will respond to any public comments we receive by 12:06, and are hoping for one deliberation session on 12:07 for findings of fact. We've also sent out SEPA and notice of intent to adopt to the Department of Commerce. So we're through that process. Next would be to go to the county commissioners. And again, hopefully one work study session, a public comment period, a public hearing, and then an adoption at that point. Within the changes to Title 15, we have in general requirements highlighted in green here, just added sentence, all development within special flood hazard areas are subject to the terms of this ordinance and other applicable regulations. There's under general requirements also an addition of this section on severability. Again, I've not provided all of these in this slide, all the details, but that was something that was submitted and posted on the Planning Commission website for review as part of the notice of public hearing as published both on the website and in Kitsap Sun. So on this, these are added definitions this time around. And in some cases, these are very minor. For example, there is flood elevation study here is not necessarily an added definition. It's a change of the name. As you'll see on the next slide here, the updated definitions that was previously called flood insurance study, they've just changed the name of that. So if you go to flood insurance study, it will now say see flood elevation study. So these are very minor in nature, updated definitions of elevation certificate, flood and flooding, habitable floor, substantial improvement. These are all things that have been updated to meet current FEMA and DOE language. Provisions for flood hazard protection. In the development permit required, there's an updated, the one thing that I added that was not in the what was considered required changes from DOE was I included our electronic permit submittal language rather than submitting three paper copies, which is what our Title 15 said previously. We don't actually do permitting that way anymore. So a quick update to our current methodology was in order for that. There are three items added to required submittals, such as V-zone certificate, engineering analysis, and additional info requested by the floodplain administrator just to cover our bases. But that is all items identified by DOE in order for us to come into compliance with the state model ordinance. This next section was anchoring required. This further clarifies structural requirements to anchor houses and manufactured homes to resist flood loading and flotation. It, in my opinion, it's redundant because the building code requires that these structures be anchored for seismic and wind, which is going to be greater loading than flood loading. But again, this is the flood hazard areas ordinance, so it's in this section as well. Out of the materials and methodologies, just some minor changes here in yellow. Rather than stating that these system components must be installed for floods up to the base flood elevation, it said conditions of flooding. And since we've changed the language or the definition in flooding to accommodate this change. One of the biggest changes is in residential construction, no major actual changes. However, we split out. Now FEMA has split out the various different zones and how we address those zones. It's largely the same. We want in these zones, we need to be building our structures a foot above the base flood elevation to the finished floor. One exception to that is our V zones, which are required to be the underside of that structural member for the lowest member. Also splits out some criteria for AO zones that they need to meet the requirements of the National Flood Insurance NFIP Flood Insurance Manual, Appendix A. You also see that we reference Appendix B for our V zones, V1 through 30 and VE zones. Real quick, I can address what those are. I'm sure that'll be a question. V zones are areas of wave action. So that's going to be our open water areas, such as the Puget Sound. So we have a few V zones in Kitsap County, largely on the north end of the county, facing Hood Canal, pointing out towards Straits of Juan de Fuca. That's where we get that wave action floodplain area. And so a few additional criteria there, just in terms of height, where we measure that too. This is different here, number three, going backwards a little bit. We have some unnumbered A zones where we don't actually have a base flood elevation that is mapped by FEMA. In those cases, we need to have the house built with the finished floor level 2 feet above the highest adjacent grade. I think most every house that I've seen built for the last decade has been elevated above the ground level by 3 steps or more, which would get us to 2 feet above that highest adjacent grade. So the way we do conduct construction standard construction, none of this really affects that. If you're wondering where unnumbered A zones might be, we have a few I've identified further up Clear Creek away from Silverdale. As you get further north, the creek area is an unnumbered A zone. And so that just means we don't have a base flood elevation for that, but there is still the ability for us to have some flooding in those areas. There are a few other areas, most creek, not necessarily riverine, but creek areas. And then you see item D for number five, the garage attached to a residential structure, construction with garage flap below. The base flood elevation must be designed to allow for automatic entry and exit of floodwaters. These are pretty standard items. They just, in this case, have identified not just the crawl space, but the garage must meet those criteria. And then one thing, item number six here, the amendment to this is something that I have added because this is straight out of the building code. Whereas item number six stated that subgrade crawl spaces are prohibited, the building code actually has a reference. It's a state amendment to the building code. So it's something that was brought to us by State Building Code Council. Says that if these crawl spaces meet the requirements of FEMA TB 11, which is a document from FEMA, that they are actually allowed. I decided I'd rather have our codes align rather than having something in Title 15 say that you can't do it and something in Title 14 say that you can. So I've added that myself. And then non-residential construction, we talked about this last time as well. Non-residential is going to be your commercial infrastructure type, mercantile businesses, office buildings, industrial areas. If it's in the flood zone, then must be dry flood proofed up to the base flood elevation. And it must be substantially impermeable to the passage of water or dry flood proof to the elevation required by ASCE 24 is the American Society of Civil Engineers standard number 24. And that is also referenced in our definitions as a new definition. New provisions this time around, enclosed area below the lowest floor. Just stating that if it's below the floodplain BFE, it can only be used for like a garage or storage areas or your entry, but not living space. And then an additional item also found in FEMA standard for the Washington Model Ordinance, livestock sanctuaries. These are elevated areas within the floodplain that livestock can congregate at that's going to be above that flood level. Not too many of these situations in Kitsap County, but again, statewide is a requirement to have that within our code. This would really come into play more in the Centralia, Chehalis area of the state. Some less common conditions are the AE and A1 through 30 zones with base flood elevations, but no floodways. I've not identified any of these in Kitsap County. That's not to say that there aren't any, but I've not identified any. And then there's also AO zones for shallow flooding area provisions. Pardon me for a moment, I need to take a drink. Okay, under department responsibilities, just a couple added items. To ensure the site is reasonably safe from flooding, and notify FEMA when annexations occur in the special flood hazard area. And then also on the record keeping side of things, a few added items here. We had to add the documentation of elevation to the bottom of the lowest horizontal structure member for V or VE zones, which is how we're gonna review for V and VE zones. So that's just something that's gonna have to be contained within permit documentation in order for us to approve it. Therefore, we will have that in our documentation and saved moving forward. And then number six, records of all variance actions, including justification for their issuance. And number seven, improvement and damage calculations. That plays into substantial improvement. So an existing building within the floodplain would have to meet all floodplain criteria if they go over 50%. So we have to, the 50% of, pardon me, evaluation against the value of the building. So we would have to keep that information to basically justify whether we did or did not require it to meet criteria. And then just questions, anything you've got for me at this point in time? And I guess that's opening it to return it back to you, Chairman Phillips, for the remainder of the public hearing.
Yes. This is a public hearing. At this time, I don't have any public attendees at this time. Do any of the commissioners have additional questions for this? No? Okay. All right. So I would say we've opened for public hearing and there are no comments. So we will close the public hearing at this time. And thanks for your presentation.
Yeah, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right. With the flood hazards done, we are now item H, finding of facts for the zoning use table update. And Melissa, I believe you're up.
Thanks. Give me just a moment to share my screen.
Okay.
So we are basically at the end of the Planning Commission portion of the zoning use table update. Congratulations. Thanks for getting us this far. So to recap, we held the public hearing with your body on September 21st. At that public hearing, the commission chose to extend the public comment period to September 24th. During that time, we did receive a total of 77 public comments. We transmitted the public comments and staff's responses on October 4th and October 15th. And the Planning Commission deliberated on October 5th, attempted on October 19th, and then again on October 26th, and concluded last week with the recommendation to the department to approve the draft ordinance with the amendments that the commission had voted on at that meeting, previous meetings during the deliberations. So tonight, what we need to have you do is adopt the findings of fact, and the findings of fact as attached to your executive summary for this meeting include per code that the draft ordinance is supported by the capital facility plan, is consistent with the GMA, our countywide planning policies, as well as the comprehensive plan. It reflects current local circumstances and has a substantial relationship to the general public health, safety, morals, or welfare. So for this evening, what we need from you is have a main motion, for example, moving to recommend approval of the findings of fact. Again, reminder, this is not the ordinance, this is just the findings of fact document. And then if any commissioners feel like it's necessary to amend the finding of fact as presented by staff, that would come after the opening amendment. So I'll come back to this slide in case anybody needs it. But after this, once we have your signature, Chair Phillips, we will transmit the findings of fact to the Board of County Commissioners. We have a briefing next week with them, as well as in December, and then we'll be going into our work study period with them in January. We'll also be doing meetings with the various CACs in January, and then February, the board will hold their public hearing. We have a couple of deliberations scheduled with them February to March, and then they will adopt at the end of March, and we have a 3-month delay for the effective date so that we can get staff and all of our internal processes centered around the updates to the code. So that's what I have for my presentation. And back here in case anybody'd like it for guidance making their recommendations.
So do I have a motion on the floor to adopt the finding of facts? Guys, you're so...
So just a reminder that a motion to approve just opens things up and that can prompt discussion. And then from there, you guys can make amendments if you need them. But an approval or motion for approval in a second will open things up, kick us off.
It's always a discussion after move. Commissioner Carey.
I move to approve the findings of fact.
All right. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Commissioner Bow. Thank you. Okay, now that brings us to any discussion regarding the findings of fact. Commissioner Beam. Yeah, you're muted still, so.
I was reviewing the documents today. I found difficult to find where we'd made our changes to the process in our deliberations. I was sort of expecting to see a red line saying these are the things that we changed, and that didn't show up.
It was all the way at the bottom of the attached document. So there's the draft ordinance that's the attachment to the findings of fact, and then there's a change matrix that captures what the red line changes were.
Can we see that?
Yeah, it could be.
I have it on my screen if that's...
Yeah, go ahead, Angie.
Real quick.
I do as well.
Do. So commissioners, as part of your executive summary packet, and you have the executive summary as well as the ordinance that was subject to the public comment period and the public hearing as mentioned by Melissa. And bear with me, I'm going to fast forward to the very end of this 207-page document. So avert your eyes if you do not want to see any of this. So on the far back of all of it, and this is a testament to the work that the Planning Commission undertook in its review, is a change matrix on PDF page 199. So here's all the various documentation of the changes based upon the ordinance subject to the hearing and red line strikeout of that, in addition to particular permissibilities or uses in the various zones that you see here before you. We spent a lot of time at the last Planning Commission meeting going over Manchester or Lamrid zones in particular that has been identified here. I'm happy to scroll a little bit more slowly through the change matrix if folks want to absorb that way.
No, it's probably my fault. I stopped at the signature page.
Oh. Okay. All right. Any other questions or issues? No? Okay. So at this point, with no discussion, we can call for a vote. And all those in favor of adopting the finding of facts, please raise your hand, say yes. Where are we? 1, 2, 3. 6. All those opposed? 1. And that's the total number. So 6-1, finding the fact passes. And we will be signing that and sending it forward to the Board of Commissioners. All right. Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
All right. Second general public comment. We're exciting today. Nobody. We did have one person pop in and out, but I don't see anybody. Amanda, nobody on the phones. Okay. So we'll close that general public comment and open for the good of the order or commissioner comments. Talkative group. Okay, we will close the for the good of the order. And all those in favor of adjourning the meeting, please raise your hand, say aye. Yes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Everybody's there. Wonderful. Okay. We will see you in December. All right.
Thanks. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Night.